I think it was just realizing that, you know, maybe half of my life was over, and did I really want to live the next half of it not attempting all these dreams of mine?
Hi there, and welcome to the Mother of Reinvention show. I'm Megan Francis, your host, and in this podcast, we're talking about all the ways women reinvent ourselves as we move toward our 40s and beyond. Whether you're hoping to make a career change, are rediscovering parts of yourself that went dormant during the early years of motherhood, or maybe are trying to pay more attention to your health and wellness, Mother of Reinvention is here to inspire and inform you as you ask yourself, what's next? When I read that today's guest, Tanya Dalton, had always considered herself, quote, mediocre at everything, unquote, but then ran a marathon for the first time at 47, I knew I had to talk to her. First of all, I've never really considered myself very athletic, and while I know there are things I am good at, nothing in the physical realm has ever made that list. Another thing I've been noticing now that I'm in my mid-40s is how when I take good care of my body, I feel just as good or better than I did when I was in my 30s. But when I fall off the wagon, those bad choices catch up with me really fast and really hard. As an example, I got pretty busy over the last couple of weeks and basically abandoned my yoga and walking routine. And within just a few days, I felt terrible, so stiff and sore. And now it's that much harder to bounce back because not only am I out of that routine, but it feels harder because my body doesn't feel great. So it's like I can feel that time is ticking by, and I'm ever more acutely aware that the small choices I make every day are what adding up to how I feel now and how I will feel in the future. Plus, it'll affect what I can accomplish down the road. At 44, I know it's really not too late to learn or try anything new, but I do find myself wondering sometimes about when I may pass that last chance to attempt some kind of feat of athleticism. I've never wanted to run a marathon, but I might want to learn how to do a headstand in yoga or hike a really tough trail or learn a complicated dance routine or even something on the more artistic side that still requires some physical coordination, like learning a new musical instrument. So I'm at a weird age where I know so many of those things are still possible, yet I'm acutely aware that they won't always be possible. At some point, it really will be my last chance to try whatever that new thing is. And the better I take care of myself day to day now, the more I can hopefully extend that period where I'm still able to face those new challenges. Of course, as time goes by, I also realize I can't do all the things and I don't really want to anyway. So it's a great opportunity to ask myself, what are the things I'll regret if I never try? And what are the ways I can set myself up for success now? So in that vein, I hope you'll enjoy my conversation with Tanya Dalton. Tanya is a healthy aging coach, a personal trainer, and a distance runner with a great attitude and a really realistic but encouraging approach to staying active as you get older. We'll get to our conversation in just a moment, but first I want to talk about this season's sponsor, Vionic. If you're like me and you like to stay moving, you're definitely going to want to check out Vionic's line of stylish, comfortable footwear. I basically live in their boots and booties all fall and winter. They have so many different styles, from dressier heeled booties to my casual favorite, the Lois, which is great for walking the dog or running errands. Like all of Vionic's footwear, their boots are ridiculously comfortable with 3-zone comfort that offers stability, cushioning, and amazing arch support. With Vionic's 30-day wear test, you can return any pair of shoes for 30 days for a full refund, even if they've been worn outside. So there's no risk. Go to vionicshoes.com and use promo code MORE, that's M-O-R, to get free shipping on your pair of Vionics. Again, that's vionicshoes.com and use the promo code MORE, M-O-R, for free shipping. Okay, let's get to my conversation with marathon runner and personal trainer, Tanya Dalton. Hi, Tanya. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks, Megan. I'm really looking forward to this.
Yes, I'm so excited to have you. I started following you on Instagram a while ago and then, you know, found my way over to your website, as we do. And I just loved your personal story. So that's where I'm going to start. You had a blog post on your website where you said that you had always considered yourself mediocre at everything. And then you decided to run a marathon. Okay. So first of all, I need to make a link between these two things, mediocre at everything. Like, why did you think that? And then like, what was the mental transition that even allowed you to take on such a huge challenge.
Yeah, well, basically, like I've always been kind of a perfectionist, which I'm working on very hard at the moment, trying to improve that kind of part of my life. But in a perfectionist maybe way. And therefore, I kind of had really high standards for myself. And so though I've been sporty all my life, I've never won a race or event and never excelled at any kind of sport. So I've always been really active. I never even considered myself an athlete actually until maybe this year actually. So, wow. So what kind of prompted me to run the marathon was that I'd always wanted to do a marathon since I was 15. I think I first started talking about it, and I'd thought about it on and off over the years, but I actually realized actually also recently that it seems that my entire reproductive life, I kind of didn't actually push myself, and I was kind of paralyzed by some kind of fear, I suppose, or I was just busy working and bringing up children and things like that. So when I was starting to approach the age which my dad was when he died of a sudden heart attack, so that was when he was 47. So when I was approaching my 47th birthday, I really somehow started to think about my own mortality more, I suppose, and thought, oh my goodness, I have, you know, all these things that I kind of wanted to do, but I was too scared to, and I was such a perfectionist that I'd never actually gone ahead and tried them. And I thought, if I don't start doing these kind of things now, you know, if I live a short life like my dad, it's almost over. If I don't get happening soon, you know, I might run out of time. So that kind of was the instigator for me training for and doing the marathon. And yeah, I'm so happy that kind of occurred because yeah, it's been life changing.
Yeah, and I just think it's so interesting that you are a perfectionist, but also felt that you were mediocre. And I wonder if those two things go hand in hand, because if you're a perfectionist, you're afraid to fail. So then exactly. You don't really try. You don't try as hard as you could maybe, because then you'd be obvious that you were trying, and then the failure would be that much more obvious.
That's exactly. Anything that I couldn't, that I didn't know I could excel at, I didn't do. So that meant I basically, my entire reproductive life, I didn't do much at all, which is just to look back now and think, oh my goodness, all these years, like 30 something years of my life that I wasted thinking like that. But I'm so happy that now I've been able to, you know, come through that. And I think that menopause actually has been one of the, and my dad's death as well, have been kind of the two combined things that have allowed me to kind of move on. And I'm hoping that now the next 30 or so years of my life is going to be totally different.
Yeah. Well, and I think that there's something, I was another expert that I was talking to was that in menopause, was talking about the brain chemistry changes that happen. And I think, you know, you mentioned a few times the reproductive years. When I was in what I would call my reproductive years, which for me was well over a decade, I feel like, you know, that I was actually making and having babies, not just able to, that spanned much longer. But it wasn't even on my radar to do stuff like that. I was so engrossed in nurturing and caring for children. And maybe there's something about this stage of your life where it's just possible, and before there wasn't room for it.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I actually talk about this all the time. I feel like that those nurturing hormones really kind of held me back from living this life that I'm living now. And I know it's not the same for everyone, but because my dad died also when I was in my early 20s, and my mum and dad had an 8-year-old at the time. So my brother's only 8. So I kind of was involved with his bringing up. And then I had my own children. So I don't know whether it's menopause as such, but I really think that once we lose estrogen and our reproductive hormones, that kind of nurturing thing kind of disappears a little bit, and we're able to think more about ourselves. And I know it's combined with the life stage as well, but and I'm still, you know, my kids are super busy, they're teenagers, so I'm still a nurturer, but I feel like I can actually put myself first more as well, and that's been a wonderful thing for me.
It's like you can separate yourself from the driver, like the hormonal drivers that are pushing you towards those things. I agree, because
that's exactly
I mean, I have these great relationships with my kids, and I'm not at the point. I don't believe that I've hormonally quite crossed over yet, but I do feel a gradual distancing from my feelings about it. Like, I don't feel like I have to be so close and up in their stuff all the time. And it is, it's nice. It's like a nice little break after having it for so, so long.
Yeah, that's been one of the big benefits for me for menopause. It's just been, it's just allowed me to really, like I said, put myself first more and think about my own needs again.
Yeah. Well, you said when I read your blog post, you talked about the marathon and how hard it was. And I believe you said that you were like whimpering and crying as you were doing it. And I'm just thinking to myself, man, I don't even like to run a mile. So literally, how did you do this? I mean, you obviously, because this was something you'd wanted to do since you were young, you must enjoy something about running. But really, like, when you were in those moments where it was so hard, really, how did you do it?
Yeah, well, the actual marathon itself wasn't, I mean, it was hard, but it wasn't the hard part. It was the training that was the hard part. So that was so challenging for me. But I just found this ability to think, well, you know, you kind of do need to go through some kind of maybe discomfort to get to where you want in everything in life, I suppose, right? Isn't it? And that's been the marathon, really, for me. It was kind of a life-changing thing, and it's allowed me to put myself out of my comfort zone so much more in so many other areas of my life, like speaking to you even, who would have never imagined that I'd be speaking to people about menopause, for example, who in my wildest dreams would be thinking that I'd be doing that. So, yeah, so the training was super hard, and I'm not a natural endurance athlete, but somehow I just, kept going. And, like you said, I was when you get it, you're just near the end, you need to get up to the really long, just a couple of really long runs just to make sure your body can do the distance. So 30 to 35 kilometer training run. And I would come home literally hours after my family expected to see me. I was so slow, and I was whimpering and I cried, but something within me had, made me keep going. And even leading into the marathon, because I was so slow, and I have an osteoarthritic toe joint as well, so that causes a few issues with pain and driving off my front foot, and causes lots of compensatory issues in my body. So that kind of doesn't help me be fast. But leading up to the actual day of the marathon, I actually wasn't even sure whether I would get through the cutoffs where they make you stop running on the road and
you have
to run
on the footpath.
They're like,
stop it already. We have to close up.
Yeah, they do. Yeah. So they let you keep going, but you have to run on the footpath, and then you're not allowed. They finish inside this stadium in Melbourne, and you're not even allowed to finish inside the stadium. I think they just set up a little booth out the front.
They're like, just run home.
I had this fear that I wasn't even going to make that, but I still kept going, which was amazing for me, because in the past I would have never put myself in that position of kind of failing, that kind of thing. So that in itself was amazing for me. And then on the day, everything came together. I obviously had trained myself well enough, and I came in over an hour earlier than what I'd expected. Wow. And my family weren't even there to see me because
they were expecting to roll in 4 hours later or something,
Yes, exactly right. And it was just the most, and I talk about this all the time, but I still get emotional when I talk about it. It was the most amazing feeling ever, that last 1 kilometer, because I had waited, I think, 32 years to be trying to attempt this goal, and I was 47, and I didn't think I could do this when I was 25, let alone 47, and it was just amazing. And I always say to people, it kind of, the feeling that I had, because I was crying but happy, it was kind of like almost, for me, it was like childbirth. It was like this elation and joy, but exhaustion,
right?
Like that, all those emotions all in one, and it was amazing.
Oh my gosh, I love hearing this, because I mean, I'm a few years off from that age, and I can't imagine doing that 10 years ago or 20 years ago. And so to hear that that was something you were able to take on, and you'd never considered yourself an endurance athlete, like, this was not natural to you. And I think sometimes we have this idea that those kinds of athletes are born that way. Like, there's just a drive that they all have from, the time they're 12 years old or earlier, and that's what makes them able to do it. But you were able to channel something else. And I'm wondering, do you ever think about what it was that made all those pieces come together for you? Was it you know, your dad? Was it where you were in life? Was it whatever was going on in your hormones and brain chemistry? Was it maybe the camaraderie of having other people or the fear of being left outside at the booth? I don't know. Like, how did it all come together for you?
Yeah, it, like I said, it really was, I think, the combination of approaching the age my dad was when he died, plus the menopause thing, I think it was, and just realizing that, you know, like, basically, at least, you know, maybe half of my life was over. And did I really want to live the next half of it not attempting all these dreams of mine? And it's just, I just, it was life changing. And that really was the catalyst for me. Like, I can't believe it, but, you know, I've then gone on and done 3 half Ironman triathlons. And I just completed a full Ironman triathlon this year in June, in between COVID and going through postmenopause as well, all at the same time.
Yeah.
And that, so that is a 3.8 kilometer swim, 180K bike ride, and then a marathon, then a 42.2 kilometer run at the end. And I still can't believe I did it. Like, I think, I can't even imagine not in my wildest dreams did I think I could do something like that in my 20s or my 30s, let alone as a 52-year-old postmenopausal woman, like going through menopause in the middle of COVID lockdowns and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, just like life-changing, and that as well has made me realize that we are so much more capable than we can ever imagine.
Right. Wow. Tell me what training was like. Let's start with when you first started. So you decided, you know, you're coming up on the same age as when your dad died. You know that you want to accomplish this thing. You're going to start training. Where were you coming from fitness-wise, or like, you know, where your abilities were when you started? And then how did that training process look?
Yeah, so I've probably, you know, most of the last, you know, after children and things like that, it took me a little while to get back into my fitness. But yeah, I have a fairly decent base level of fitness, I suppose, right up until then. But I'd never ran more than, for the last few years before that, never ran more than, you know, 5 kilometers or 10 kilometers at the most. So yeah, so it's just a process, like everything you want to achieve, you just go through a process. So, you know, and I didn't run excessively either. Like, people think marathon runners, you know, run every day, but I couldn't because of my toe joints. So I'd maybe run 3 or 4 times a week. And it's just a gradual progression. And you just, yeah, eventually build up, and then making sure you're having recovery periods and things like that. And then, yeah, you just eventually build up to those longer runs right near the end. And this is just for an everyday person. This is not for someone that maybe is winning an Olympic medal.
Right. But we're talking to regular like people here. Yes.
Yeah. Someone like me who's a regular person. And what I think is amazing is that you go to these events, because I used to have this, I don't know, naive idea that you had to be this lean, mean, you know, the people that you see in the Olympics and things like that, that you need to look like them to do events like the marathon or the Ironman. But there's just people of all different shapes and sizes and abilities, and, you know, it's so much more possible for everyday people than what you can ever imagine. So yeah, like in the Ironman, for example, there was a man who did the whole marathon on crutches.
Wow.
Because he had a leg problem. Like, he, yeah, it's just so amazing to see like that. And a man that I was used to see throughout that whole day, because it's that whole, literally a whole day for someone like me, who was blind, and he's doing the whole thing, has a person with him. But it's just amazing. Like, and there's bigger people, much bigger people than what, you know, you don't, there's not all these super lean, skinny people. There's all different kinds of shapes and sizes. And yeah, it's really opened my eyes to what's possible. And that, yeah, I mean, unless you don't have to be an elite athlete to be able to do these kind of things.
Wow. And I think, you know, what I've always heard from people who are long distance runners or any kind of endurance athlete, and I'm with you, like, endurance is not my thing. And it's probably the thing I need to work on the most. I'm great in short sprints of all kinds, but like, keeping it going is hard. But what I know, so much of it is the mental game. So when you're hearing your brain tell you it's time to be done, you're done, this sucks, you know, like, you're tired, you're bored, whatever it is your brain is telling you, I'm guessing one of the biggest challenges is moving past that. How did you learn to do that?
Yeah, it is definitely. It's so mental with those kind of things. Oh gosh. And do you know what? I'm not great at it. I have cried, like throughout my training, I've cried a lot. I'm not really into pain. You know how some people are really, you know, they like kind of that pain thing. I do not love pain.
Right. Or like they love pain. To push themselves hard. And I'm yes, not like that either. I like to yes, push myself I, just a little bit. Yes.
Yeah. I could never be one of those people that pushes themselves so hard they throw up. Never, ever. So I'm a bit of a princess. But I think just thinking about that end goal, and I used to have, I'd be running going, I just constantly have these little chants that I say to myself, like, you know, toughen up, princess, or something like that, you know. And just, yeah, I just kind of just working out ways to get through it and just having that, I just visualizing going through the finish line, and that is one of, and what it would feel like, and exact kind of how I visualized it, exactly how it felt when you actually finally do achieve it. And it's amazing. So, yeah. It's just trying to find what works for you, I suppose. Like for me, it was just chanting to myself a lot and just thinking, you know, it doesn't matter how slow I am. I just have to get there. And, you know, and you can kind of work through pain a little bit. Like in the Ironman, for example, I have this because of my toe joint, it even hurts on the bike. And, and your back hurts as well. And I tried, I think my bike was 7 hours long, and I tried to stay on because obviously the longer you stay on, the less time you lose. So my goal was to dismount like as little as possible, and I only dismounted once throughout that whole 7 hours to restock my food. Yeah. And at times, my toe was killing me. It was throbbing. I thought, I think I'm going to have to get off and just walk around a bit and just, you know, loosen it up. But I just go, I'll just keep going for another couple of kilometers. And if it's still sore, then I'll get off. And then it's went away. So it was hard though.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. It's kind of not easy for someone like me, but saying that, showing myself that I could do those things and could kind of push through that pain barrier a little bit has given me so much more confidence with all different areas of my life. And yeah, that's the benefits. And that's kind of one of the things I thought I really wanted to prove to myself, that I am capable of stepping way out of my comfort zone. And I think I have kind of done that. Yeah.
Yeah. Did you have a group that you trained with or any kind of like, I don't know, like a community around you?
Yeah, no, I've always really trained by myself because I don't really know that many people that are kind of, it's really hard when you're really slow. It's kind of this, you know, it's
they're all ahead people. Of you and you're like, hey, I'll catch up and, you know.
Yeah, and I'm a bit, I kind of have a bit of self-confidence issues as far as my ability goes. So I trained completely by myself for the Ironman and for the marathon. And yeah, and there are clubs available, but none of the times really suited my lifestyle with my kids. So yeah, I just did it myself. And I think that's on the day as well, when you're doing the events, if you haven't trained with other people, it doesn't bother you. Do you know what I mean? I'm just there focused on myself and I can do it. Whereas if people are doing, for example, in the Ironman, doing lots of long rides in groups and things, you've got that camaraderie around you. Whereas if you're out training by yourself, suffering in the wind all the time by yourself, then you're used to it. And so I think that actually helped my mental state. And actually for the Ironman, because of lockdown, I had no one there. It was in another part of Australia and I got out just in time before we went back into another one of our lockdowns and no one else could come to the event. So I didn't have any support at all for the whole day, for the whole 13 hours or so.
Oh my goodness.
And I had to even finish by myself and just catch a cab back to where I was staying and things. So it was kind of mentally challenging, but I'm really proud of how I did that as well, because I had to just, you know, there were people out there like that had people running with them during the event and then people cheering, you know, with posters up and things like that. I had none of that. And I just had to find it within myself to just keep going and push myself and keep motivating myself. And in the end, I'm actually, I think it was really good for me. And it's really proven to me again that I am much more capable than what I ever imagined.
Wow. What about your kids? I know you have teenagers. What do they think about all this?
Yeah, well, my 15-year-old son doesn't say very much, but my daughters,
that's how they are. I have a 15-year-old son. Yep. He says very, very little. Yes.
But yeah, I think my daughter's really proud of me. And I think doing these things as well has been a really great role model for my kids, because they have seen my struggles. They've seen me crying and not wanting to, like, during lockdown, for example, training for the Ironman, I think I did an 8-hour ride in the house, like on my stationary bike, because we were in lockdown. We couldn't go out on the roads. And that is excruciatingly hard. And there was a lot of tears.
Yeah.
Going, I can't keep going. And I had to keep going if I really wanted to do this. And them seeing that struggle, but me pushing through, I think has been, yeah, really good role modeling for them. And that's, I suppose, that is actually another reason why I think I did keep going, because there were a couple of times where we go, I just can't do this. It's just too hard. And they go, Mum, you have to keep doing it. You've been done all this training. You have to keep going. So, yeah.
Wow. Well, Tanya, we're going to take a quick break. When we get back, I know that you are a personal trainer. We've got some things to dig in there. I want to talk more about menopause and also just how you work with your client.
So we'll be back after the break.
Hey, everyone. I just want to pop in really quick to remind you that you can still listen to season one of the Mother of Reinvention show. If you're just finding this podcast now, you're definitely going to want to check out our amazing lineup of guests from the first season. I talked to such cool women like Dagmara Kokonis, who went for her first hike at 40 and then wound up starting an adventure travel company for women. Angeline Bulley, who didn't start writing until her 40s and is now the author of Firekeeper's Daughter, which has been blowing up the best-selling charts since last spring. And travel writer and TV personality Heather Greenwood Davis, who took her then young sons on a year-long around-the-world trip 10 years ago, but these days is doing a lot more solo travel. Just scroll down in your podcast app to find last season's interviews, or you can head to motherofreinventionshow.com to find them there. Okay, back to the interview. Okay, so Tanya, you on your website have referred to menopause as one of the best things that ever happened to you. I know that we touched a little bit earlier on some of those transformative ways like menopause has affected your life, but I wonder why do you think it's the best thing or one of the best things that's happened to you?
Yeah, who would have thought?
Right? We're not really conditioned to think it's going to be super great. So
I'm part of this thing that wants to rebrand menopause because I think I think it can be wonderful, but I'm not saying that it wasn't challenging. I had definitely had my challenges, and you know, there's some people that don't experience symptoms and they'll just go, yeah, menopause is fine. I didn't even know anything. And that wasn't the case for me. And actually naively, because in perimenopause, a lot of people have the body composition changes and things like that. In perimenopause, that didn't really affect me for some reason. I didn't have those changes. It wasn't until my hormones actually flatlined and my period stopped that all those body composition changes started happening. So I kind of naively thought that I was going to get away with.
You were like scot-free.
And it wasn't scot-free because I did have quite severe night sweats. I would literally get up and have to change my clothes 3 times a night, dripping in sweat. And I did have other bits and pieces of symptoms, some actually that I probably didn't recognize were perimenopause at the time. And I look back now and go, oh, God, I really, you know, did have many more symptoms than what I initially thought. So it wasn't not challenging for me, but I kind of thought in that perimenopause stage that, you know, I thought I had it all under control, and then my periods stopped and my hormones flatlined, and it turned out to be, and I was training for the Ironman at the same time, and it was a bit of a disaster. So I have had my challenges, definitely, but those challenges and those symptoms that I experienced have made me reevaluate my overall health. So previously I did, you know, I think my nutrition and my exercise were quite good, but I neglected things like sleep and stress management. And that does not go well when you're going through menopause.
Yeah.
Because those things are affected, those kind of things are exasperated anyway, and you really need to help to manage them more effectively. So it's really allowed me to look so much more into my whole health, not just the exercise nutrition thing. And I think I'm healthier overall now than I have ever been in my life.
Wow.
And also, like we've discussed with the drop in the hormones, I mean, there's lots of detrimental things about losing estrogen, but you don't have the monthly cycles anymore. So there's not the up and downs of our hormones. There's just this kind of much more, and it does take a while to get there. Don't get me wrong. It can be like kind of a big process. But now around 2.5 years since my last period, I've got this kind of so much more stability throughout each month than I ever have had before in my life. And it's a really nice feeling. I love it because, you know, I used to probably get quite bad PMS before my periods, and you just don't have that kind of thing anymore. It's just much more stable. And I think I would call myself, I think I've become more passionate but calmer, if that makes sense. Those kind of two things can go against each other a little bit, but that's kind of the way I look at it. I feel like I'm more driven and passionate, but calmer overall and more stable than I've ever been in my life. And yeah, it's just for me, menopause has been this time in life that's given me this new drive and this ability to self-reflect and think about all the things that I've left behind and put on the back burner, and now I'm kind of can go for them.
Wow. So it's like a focused drive, because I think when we're, you know, when we're sort of motivated or driven by these hormonal changes, or maybe like the desire to make babies, like, you know, whatever it is that's going on, there's like almost like a desperation there. We don't even know why. It's just we're like rushing towards something. So we might be driven but conflicted. And it sounds like you found drive without the conflict so much. It's like you can just get to it and just it's like a clear focus.
Yeah. And I know that there are, I mean, we do experience, you know, our brain is affected, particularly in perimenopause and at the start of postmenopause. Our brain is affected to some extent. So people, a lot of women experience brain fog and there are a lot of issues. But once you kind of can get through that stage, then I think there's this, like, because your brain does adapt to the changes, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So
the whole thing, it's a huge thing. If you think about it, like, puberty is a huge thing as well. Like, our body takes time to adapt to the changes in hormones at puberty, and the same thing at menopause. So our body, it takes time. And I think that's where a lot of people come into, like, have problems that they're in a rush and they go, well, and they think that menopause means you're getting old. And I refuse to think like that. And I'm hoping that I'm helping to rebrand that kind of idea, is that menopause is just a different time of life. It doesn't, you know, we are aging, but it doesn't mean you have to be old. There's so much more living to be done.
Yeah. And I think that for me, what I'm kind of realizing is that just the same way that I was very curious when I was pregnant for the first time, or, like, you know, any phase of life I went through, like, there's really something about being curious about what's going on and learning about what's going on, because then you can kind of understand it better and be interested in it and not like trying to pretend it's not happening or fearing it. It's more about just like, oh, what is this? What is this new thing that's going on in my body?
Yeah, that's exactly. I love that word. Curiosity is like kind of one of my buzzwords at the moment. I think it's a lot of people's, but that's exactly right. Like, when you can become more curious and understand what's going on, it makes so much more sense, and it's not so scary and it's not so daunting. And that's the problem, because in the past, menopause hasn't been spoken about. I mean, even saying the word, you know, it's such a taboo subject. I can't believe that I spend my days talking about it now, but I do, because it shouldn't be, because, like, pregnancy, for example, is a, you know, everyone talks about pregnancy, but not every woman will have a baby. Every single woman who lives old enough is going to experience menopause.
Right. Like, there's no getting around it. Yep.
No. Yeah. And so why? I just don't get this taboo about the subject, and that's what I want to change, because when we're more informed and educated, we can, and when we're aware, because, for example, when I was in perimenopause, I probably had symptoms that I didn't realize were perimenopause symptoms. Like, I had a sore elbow for a year, I think, and joint issues can be can come about when your reproductive hormones diminish. So, and there was no other explanation. So I'm assuming now that that was a menopause thing, and it's gone away now. But when you're in the middle of it, you think, this is never going to go away.
Right.
I can't do anything with my arm for the rest of my life. But when you're educated and you go, okay, that is a symptom, what can we do to maybe help you through this time? And then now, for example, my elbow's fine. So becoming educated and aware and talking about it helps other people try to understand it, and it doesn't become so scary, and it becomes like you said, just being curious about it and seeing what how your body's coping, and and what it's telling you. That's one of the big things for me, is that I've really listened. I've learned to really listen to my body, probably for the first time properly in my life. So I really go, well, what's this symptom telling me, you know? And often it was, well, you haven't been prioritizing your sleep. So sleep is challenged at menopause, but you can do a lot to help yourself. And often I wasn't. So before I could just fall asleep, you know, with a click of a finger when I was tired, but that kind of changed at menopause. So I had to put in strategies to help myself. So it kind of has been challenging, but there's so much we can do to help ourselves. And when we're aware of that, we can actually start implementing things to help ourselves.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned earlier that you think that you're probably in the best shape that you've been in, maybe of your life, I believe you said. And I know you've also written about self-esteem issues and, like, you know, your body does look different. You might know that you're really healthy and in great shape, but things just start to look different. So I'm wondering, you know, now that you're in your 50s and when you're working with clients as a personal trainer, how do you strike the balance for yourself about, you know, between how your body looks and what it's capable of? How do you feel better about it? How do you not focus too much on how it looks and focus on how what it's capable of, or but knowing that we're all still sort of vain and we all still want to look good, right?
Yeah, well, that kind of was a challenge for me. And I wouldn't say I'm in the best, like, looking shape as I have been in my whole life. I think when I was, like I said, in perimenopause, I think I didn't really notice the physical changes. And at that time, I felt like I was definitely in the best shape of my life, if you like to say it that way. Now I think I am in the best health of my life.
Okay.
So I think that, I mean, I can't believe I've done an Ironman. Like, that I could have never imagined that my body was capable of doing that. So endurance-wise, I'm the fittest. Well, I was probably not 4 months later, but at the time I was the fittest I'd ever been in my life. But, yeah, so that was a bit of an adjustment for me. And, again, being curious was something that I took on. But I did find it hard because I was training for the Ironman right when my period stopped and my body composition started to change and I started losing muscle mass. And like I said before, I naively thought that when you did these kind of super endurance events that you had to be super lean, and that kind of wasn't happening. And it was a bit of a shock to me. And I had to really do a lot of self-reflection. So when I was in my, when I was a teen, well, basically when I started, my period started. So when I hit puberty, I had some body image issues and developed an eating disorder. And that kind of carried, the eating disorder stopped, but the body image issues continued probably throughout my 20s. So I really had to look back and go, do I want these natural, kind of natural changes? There's some things that, you know, that we can do to mitigate the changes, but your body still will change to some extent. So do I want these changes to affect the next 20 years of my life? Like, the changes that were happening to my body at puberty did, and I just go, no way, I do not want to live like that. I've tried, like you've mentioned, I've tried to turn things around and go, well, what can my body do? And my body can complete an Ironman. That's amazing. So I kind of look at what my body can do rather than what it looks like. And that's not to say that I don't still have some vanity. I want to look the best I can regardless of my age. And I'm, for example, doing more strength training and things to help improve my muscle mass again now. And I want to look good, but I don't want to be one of those people that, you know, watches everything they eat and has to go to the gym instead of going out for a coffee or things like that. So I want to try to do it in a more balanced way than maybe I did when I was younger. So, yes. And you know, like, your body changes at when you have a baby. You know, I mean, I'm trying to go, well, when I had a baby, I go, well, you know, that wrinkly skin I've got on my tummy, that shows that I've created life twice, and, you know, that's an amazing thing. And now I look at my body and go, well, this body has lived 53 years. Like, you know, I should be proud of it and happy with what it can do, not exactly be judging myself for the way it looks or about the imperfections anymore.
I know that you work with clients that are, you know, as a personal trainer, and I know you're also very, in your own life, it seems like you strike a really good balance between physical health, but also just living and just, you know, like you said, you know, you want to go out with your friends for coffee and you don't want to necessarily say I can't, because I have to be at the gym every single day or whatever it is. So what do you feel like when you're working with people or when you're, you know, even just talking to people online, if someone asked you, what are the most important things to do to just keep my level of health, not necessarily how great I look in a bikini, but like just my level of health up during this period of my life, what practices do you encourage?
Sure. Well, I think the most important thing, even though I'm a personal trainer, I think the most important thing for our health is sleep. There's so much research being done in this area, and sleep is critical for everything. Like, we need sleep to help our bodies recover from exercise, for example, and recover from our daily life. And when we don't get enough sleep, it impacts what we eat the next day. It impacts our cortisol levels, which is a huge issue in menopause. So sleep is my number one thing. I have to go, first of all, we need to get sleep under control, because that impacts your whole life. You know, I mean, you know what it's like when you're sleep deprived. It's not good.
It's not good. It's foggy.
Yeah. And it impacts your future life as well. I think this, I have no idea what the statistics are, but you know, if you have too little sleep, then your lifespan's probably going to be less than someone that has had adequate sleep.
Yeah.
So that's the number one thing. And then stress management as well, that kind of goes hand in hand. So just trying to manage stress, because again, this cortisol factor in menopause. So when we lose those reproductive hormones, our cortisol levels are kind of harder to manage, and it just creates so many problems. It's why our body kind of holds on to fat and belly fat as well. So that's an issue. And then the exercise thing. So exercise can help us in so many ways. I just so want people to be able to move, and it doesn't have to be fancy or really, I mean, moving regularly throughout the day is one of the best things I think we can do. It doesn't have to be super high impact or anything for most of the time. So just moving regularly throughout the day, like I try to take the dog for a walk first thing in the morning and then in the evening, and then I just try to kind of get up from my desk if I'm working a lot throughout the day. So those kind of simple things that, you know, maybe you think aren't important, they really do all add up over time to help create a healthier body. And with specifics for kind of menopausal women, it seems kind of counterproductive, because often when we start going through menopause, we start putting on weight and it makes people want to exercise more and eat less, and that's really counterproductive. That actually ends up kind of doing the opposite and making things harder for ourselves. So, yeah, so it's kind of rethinking exercise. So there's kind of a bit of a controversy about what's the best type of exercise to do for women in this age. But from my research and studies, it seems that, yeah, like reducing that really long. So training for the Ironman, not really ideal for a menopausal woman. So if you want to do things like that, it's still possible, because, you know, I've done it, but you do have to put a lot more recovery into your week if you're going to do something like that. And then also with the actual proper exercise sessions, trying to keep them kind of short. So the days of going to, you know, a lot of women our age might have gone to aerobic classes and done three in a row, for example.
Yeah.
Those kind of days are a bit more, that's kind of counterproductive as well. So you kind of just wanting to get into the gym and get out, like even 30 minutes is probably better for us now than doing an hour, and trying to just kind of hit it short and hard. So any exercise you do is going to elevate your cortisol levels, but if you can just keep it short and hard, it's elevated for a bit and then it kind of goes back down again faster. So so kind of trying to incorporate, if you can, some kind of HIIT training, which is high intensity interval training, where, for example, you might work really hard for 20 seconds and then have a 10-second break, and then really hard for 20 seconds and 10-second break again. And that, yeah, but for even maybe even for 15 minutes, it really doesn't need to be that long. And that's kind of a really good thing, I think, because, you know, it's so much more time efficient. If you can just go in and exercise in short spurts, it gives you so much more time to do, you know, lots of other things in your life, which is really good.
I was going to say, I think too, sometimes like knowing that if you want to get into the gym, it's going to be like an hour and a half before you get out becomes a deterrent, and you don't want to do it. Yes. So then you don't do it at all. And then what is the, you know, consequence of that? Whereas if you were just doing 15 to 20 minutes at a time, you might keep going.
Yes. Yes. I know. It's good. It's so much better, because I think you know, we looked down at home and I can go, I can do 15 minutes. You know, that's kind of possible. I can find 15 minutes in my day to train. So it's so good. It's kind of good that this is kind of the way that's better for us to train. And then the other thing ideally we need to do is some kind of strength training. And not initially, you need to work up to it, but working up to a kind of strength training where you can lift something only maybe 6 times. So before it's too heavy. So the idea is that will help stimulate our muscle mass, and we're not going to get bulky by doing that. We can't, especially after when our reproductive hormones are flatlined, we can't get bulky. It's really, really hard. Right. So we need to kind of lift something really heavy. So that kind of stimulates our muscle to grow. So it kind of breaks down the muscle a little bit and then it has to grow to get stronger. So we need to kind of be doing some kind of strength training because that will help increase our muscle mass, which will then help on metabolism because, the less muscle mass we have, the more weight we put on basically. So, if you have more muscle, you're burning more calories, which is a win-win. And then by saying that, I don't mean lifting doing a bicep curl, for example. You need to do something that uses a lot of muscles, so lose your big muscles, like the big muscles in your legs and things like that. And there's all different ways you can do that, like because I think when we get to, midlife, almost everyone has got some kind of issue that they've got to deal with and like past injuries or medical conditions or whatever. Like I've got my toe joint that makes things hard. So there's always workarounds. So don't feel like that because you can't do like a squat, for example, that there's not something else you can do. You could do a leg press on a machine at a gym and there's always something that you can do. So I try to emphasize to people that there might be the ideal workout regimes, but you still have to be able to fit it into your lifestyle and to work with your body that you have at the moment. So, that's really, really important.
Well, Tanya, this has been so great. In the show notes, we will link to your website, which is called Beautiful Midlife, which I love. And it's at TanyaDalton.com. We will link that up. And I know that you've got your blog on there, which I loved reading, and some different things about the way you work with clients and some recipes as well. It has been wonderful talking with you. And I'm just so excited to have met you.
Thanks, Megan. Me too. I've really enjoyed this. It's been great. Thank you.
Well, thanks everyone for listening to this episode of Mother of Reinvention. Like always, everything from today's episode will be in the show notes at motherofreinventionshow.com. And don't forget to check out our sponsor, Vionic, and my favorite fall loafer, the Willa Flat. Remember, you can get free shipping by going to vionicshoes.com and using the code MORE, that's M-O-R, at checkout. If you are loving this show, it would help me out a lot if you leave me a rating or review wherever you listen to podcasts. And remember, you can always send an email at motherofreinventionshow@gmail.com. Okay, friends, thanks so much for listening, and we'll be back with another great episode next Thursday. Talk to you soon.